Hello and welcome into the Gotta Be Saints podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Gotta. Join me each week as I speak with future saints about being saints. Today's podcast is titled The Legacy of St. Francis Xavier Cabrini. I have with me Christian Theriault. Did I say that right?
Theriault.
Sorry, I wrote it down.
That's okay.
I had it phonetically and planned to say it. Thank you so much for coming on today to talk about St. Francis Xavier Cabrini.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you're listening to this, you probably are aware that in the last couple weeks, Angel Studios released a movie on St. Francis Xavier Cabrini, just titled Cabrini. And this movie, if you haven't seen it, is worth watching. It portrays a wonderful story about this great saint, and cinematically it's very well done also. But we're here to talk about the actual person. The movie does a wonderful job of portraying her life, but there's a lot more that we can share and we can learn from as Catholics. So I'm excited to get to talk to you, Kristen, about this. So can you just introduce yourself?
Sure. So my name is Kristen. I am the media spokesperson for Sophia Institute Press. So usually I am on the radio circuit representing dead authors, either dead or sometimes Italian or some other reason that they can't do their own book tour themselves here to a U.S. audience. Most recently, I published my own book called When the Sickle Swings, Stories of Catholics Who Survived Communist Oppression, where I interviewed Catholics from a wide array of countries that were oppressed under communism in the 20th century and told their stories, relying on oral history interviews. And since then, my most recent project has been this Cabrini devotional, which really was providential. Mother Cabrini is not someone that I knew a great deal about before this project, or someone I had really a strong personal devotion to until I started this. And so this is really arising from, obviously, the tie-in to the movie, and it's something that I've worked on for the past month, where I got to read through many of her travel letters, her letters home to her sisters from her various voyages, founding missions across the globe. So very blessed to have the two books now under my wing and to continue to do this work of discussing the faith and these very interesting books from the Church's treasury with many of our audience members.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on. I think it'd be interesting at some point to talk to you about your book as well. But it's great for today to be discussing Mother Cabrini. I think her life is so unique, so beautiful, and yet not as well known as I think it should be. Myself included, I feel like I didn't know much about her until really recently in watching that movie. Of course, I was given a little bit more information, but I think as Catholics, we have such a beautiful wealth of men and women to try to emulate, to try to follow, and to look at their example. And this is one of those people, especially here in the United States. So I'm excited to get to dive a little bit deeper into that. It's been a little over 100 years since Mother Cabrini left this earth. But her impact is still felt in a very real way. Can you give a snapshot of her life to those who are listening?
Sure. So she was born in 1850 in the Lombard region of Italy, and she grew up quite sickly, actually. So she seems to have always had this dream to pursue a religious vocation, but her entry to her convent of choice was denied because of her poor health, unfortunately. So she went on to found her own order, the Missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and she always had this heart for missionary work. And so her name, Francesca Saviero, Francis Xavier, obviously she took her second name in honor of St. Francis Xavier, the great missionary. And it's really beautiful to read in her letters all of the times that she refers to him or quotes from him to inspire her sisters in their missionary vocation. And kind of as you alluded to, it's really beautiful to read the lives of our favorite saints and discover that they had their own favorite saints, and just the impact and this trajectory that continues throughout the ages of special devotions and saints who adopt each other in this way. And so Her goal initially, as is depicted in the movie, was to travel to China to establish missions there. And she met with Pope Leo XIII in pursuit of this. And he famously told her not to the east, but to the west. And he instructed her, instead of China, totally not what she was thinking, but to rather go to the United States to serve the poor Italian immigrant community in New York City. This is not something she was expecting, because we tend to think, oh, the United States was, you know, settled for quite some time. It had been a Christian country for a while. Why would it need missionaries? But especially for this very marginalized Italian immigrant community, as the film portrays so well, as they say, rats had it better, where just the physical conditions were horrific. And so she provided much of this human relief to their suffering. But also the state of the faith had to be rejuvenated. Mother Cabrini's primary focus in her life was to save souls. And this is something that I think comes through much more in her writings and in books about her than necessarily in the film, is that while the human impact of her humanitarian work is really unmatched, and of course, her order was the first female missionary order that had the great global scope that it did, it was really secondary to her ultimate vocation, which was to save souls and to provide for their eternal happiness. And this is part of the impetus behind having schools, for example, is they would form the soul and provide this really strong Catholic formation that the person could take far into their life and to their death, and to cultivate faith in the soul for their entire life, long after she and her sisters had gone. So she became quite successful, as the film portrays. Her tenure in New York City resulted in huge developments and a real recognition of her work in both the secular sphere and in the church, of course. She continued throughout several continents. Famously, she also has missions within the U.S. in Chicago and Denver, and then in Europe, South America, Central America, etc. And her mission did finally, after her death, make it to China. So it came full circle. She was canonized in 1946 by Pope Pius XII. So this was quite a short period in between her life, because she died in 1917 and her canonization. So it's really interesting to speak to people. Even both of my grandparents discuss their parents having strong devotions to Mother Cabrini, because they would have been contemporaries of hers. So her story is really not that far removed from our present day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I appreciate you too talking about, you know, the reality that this is a woman whose real goal, above all else, was the salvation of souls. Mm-hmm. If you watch the movie, of course, this is not just a promotion of the movie. It is good. But I think the critique I've seen from many, especially in the Catholic realm, is that the spiritual side of Mother Cabrini is not necessarily greatly shown through. Of course, they show her in these settings. They show her with her sisters. They show her with the Archbishop. They show her with the Pope, which is beautiful and a great, I think, for many people to see, especially those who aren't Catholic, who might be watching this movie. But for you and me, and for those probably listening to this podcast, we know that for Mother Cabrini to do anything that she did, first, prayer had to be at the forefront of that, which is not necessarily shown in great detail in the movie. But also, the reality of her work was not Mother Cabrini doing these things through Mother Cabrini, with Mother Cabrini. It was Jesus Christ doing these things through a woman who was open to it, who also had this intention, this desire to bring other people closer to him in a real way, which, of course, goes with what you're saying about the salvation of souls. So I just appreciate you, you know, kind of making a point there. As we look at the inspiration of what really led Mother Cabrini to serve the immigrants and the needy? Interested in learning more about your faith? I invite you to check out Good Catholic. They are a digital media brand focused on sharing and teaching about the faith. From podcasts to blogs to digital series, Good Catholic has it all. Use the code in the show notes to get 20% off your order at Good Catholic.
So basically, this was just the greatest need. So she, as a good daughter of the church, went where she was instructed and went where she was most needed. So it really, again, seems like something that was providential in her life, that she, of course, had this a strong Italian background and the language skills necessary to minister to this community and the heart for these people. And it just happened to be at that time in New York City, where, unfortunately, immigrant groups, especially Italians, as we saw with the Irish and other eras in history, were quite marginalized and discriminated against and really had a hard time assimilating into U.S. society. We have to remember, too, that there is a certain degree of anti-Catholic bias that extends even into this period in the U.S. This is really founded as a Protestant country for the first decades. Maryland was really the only safe haven. And so a bit of this WASPy pretentiousness still does continue, too, into how the church's standing had been. And so she, again, just saw the need, and it became obvious, and she never would turn anyone away, as far as I understand, but this community just happened to be the most in need.
Yeah, well, it's beautiful. I think so too we can learn from that about what the Lord would like to do with each and every one of us. Sometimes we just need to ask ourselves, what is going to call us to love the most, or, you know, where is the big need, Lord, that needs filled? Where can we put ourselves? So I think Mother Cabrini provides a great example there. Can you share a story or two that you might have about her that really kind of illustrates her character and determination? Because from everything I understand, she did face opposition in her quest to serve and help and provide support, especially once she was here in the United States, both from a health standpoint, but also from just the local ordinances and the people that she interacted with. I think it's important to kind of share those stories, if you have any, where the Lord very clearly put himself at the forefront and showed that he's capable of accomplishing much as long as we're open to it.
Sure. So I'll give a few examples from her travels. So in researching the Cabrini Companion, I set it up as a devotional for 52 weeks. So it's a companion to the movie, but also for the year. And I drew thematically from her letters that she wrote on these voyages that she wrote home to her sisters. So they're full of the very inspiring vignettes, not only of life on board and her observations of the beauty of God's creation, for example, but also of the people that she met on board and the challenges she faced and how she was constantly seeking conversions among all strata of society. So rather than having a somewhat myopic focus on a certain community, she had this finesse where she was able to speak to people from all echelons and all socioeconomic backgrounds to try to bring the message of the gospel to them. So one thing I found very interesting is that on board these ocean liners, there were many quite prominent Protestant passengers, especially Anglican, and she often made friends with these passengers, and they would kind of just be struck by seeing a group of sisters out in public, and they just had this ethereal calm and this peace of the Lord about them that just sort of attracted people to them. And so she recounts many such instances where Protestants would join them for dinner and speak to them on board. And of course, eventually the topic always turned to the faith, and several of them walked away being potential converts, and she had planted those seeds of faith. So for one example, there was a prominent Protestant lady who would dine with them frequently. And on the last day of the voyage, Mother Cabrini gifted her a small cross, and she said, "Oh, perhaps one day I will be a Catholic," just out of the blue. And it was an example of kind of converting through actions rather than having to preach outright, which was really beautiful. And we, of course, don't know who this person is and how their life ended up, but Mother Cabrini knows now. So, no. And then in terms of opposition and adversaries, one example from the voyages is actually they were trying to land somewhere in Central America, and someone was halting their progress and would stop the ship from landing. And of course, the sisters had to go somewhere and get off the ship in order to meet with the priests and the bishops and to establish their mission. And someone was doing this out of malice towards them to try to stop their mission. And it turns out that it was a Freemason who was on board. And once the passengers heard of this, all of the passengers, whether they were Catholic or not, just were shocked and sort of shamed this man for his actions. And why would you do this? And how dare you prevent the sisters and their holy mission? And he eventually relented and kind of repented from that, and hopefully would give up his Freemasonry. Although, again, we don't know his identity, so we don't know what became of him. But it was quite astonishing to me to just see how she inspired this respect from those around her, including those in the secular sphere. And she often talks about how the captains would invite them to dine with them in their particular cabins, and just everyone had this deferential manner towards her. So she had this way about her that she, of course, had this amazing spiritual presence, but also was a very no-nonsense type of personality who would get things done.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful. So thank you for those stories. I think those do paint a wonderful picture of, you know, what who she was and what she was able to accomplish. And it's always wonderful when you're thinking about this saint, you know, to kind of almost be able to imagine yourself sitting there talking with her. And I feel like your stories do a good job of just talking about this person who was approachable and loving and kind and had the ability also to just change hearts by being Christ. And people clearly saw that in her, which is so beautiful. And then your sharing of just talking about how, you know, they were meeting the nuns in real life. I think that's a problem today. Many people don't have the opportunity to meet nuns. And of course, many orders are cloistered, so it makes sense. But it is beautiful when you get to go to church or you go to the grocery store and you see a sister. And I always find great joy in that. And I think it brings joy to a lot of other people as well.
For sure.
I'd love to shift the conversation just slightly and talk about her legacy today. In what way would you say Mother Cabrini's influenced modern approaches to social work, to charity, and even, you know, the school system here in the United States?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question. I know, just in terms of a solid physical legacy, there's Cabrini University in Pennsylvania, which actually has a great digital archive of some of the primary source material from Mother's life, if anyone's interested in reading some of her letters in her own handwriting. And of course, many of her missions are still active. There's the Shrine in New York City, right near the Met Cloisters, that has had, especially now, I'm sure, many more visitors since the movie has been released and been promoted. So her actual legacy with a strong direct line is very clearly active within the church. And then also, I learned the other day that Mother Teresa actually cited Mother Cabrini as one of her inspirations in her work. And so hearkening back to this idea of the saints taking inspiration from one another, I thought that was really beautiful that she took this model that Mother Cabrini had enacted and made it her own, used it in her own way, and followed her own vocation the way God was calling her to, but was really convicted by that work and took what she could from it. So you can definitely see her work still at play in the church. In terms of the social aspect and the educational system in the U.S., I think, I mean, unfortunately, we're kind of in a dark period of public education in the U.S. in many ways, but I would have to check exactly how her methodologies have migrated into the educational sphere and into Catholic school curricula and things like that. But I would say that she is certainly an inspiration, and the fact that she and Mother Elizabeth Ann Seton, for example, are both these great American examples of education, I think is really inspiring, because these are people who were acting kind of without the usual strictures of the academy in Europe and having to make do in a new land with a whole diverse array of problems. And for example, Mother Cabrini discusses in her travels to Denver how the people she was ministering to there were really, at that point, at the turn of the 20th century, it was still somewhat of an outpost. And people who lived there were there for work in the logging industry and didn't really have a permanent community, so to speak, especially for the church. So her tactics had to change there rather than an established place like New York City or an even more established place like somewhere in Europe. this was a community that was very transient and that was often lacking the basic infrastructure that one would expect. So she had to really think on her feet in terms of schooling tactics and to, I think, take a very individualized approach to each of her students.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that you paint a good picture. And I think it also is a reminder to us of, you know, when we look at the schooling system today, oftentimes, you know, we look at these institutions and they've been around for 100 years or something, and we forget to think about who started those places. And especially when you look at it from a faith standpoint, these Catholic institutions, many of them have been created, like you're saying, by Elizabeth Ann Seton or by Mother Cabrini, or have had influences by those great saints. And it's so necessary that we have those institutions. And it's also formed many of the great minds here in the United States and many of the great holy men and women that we have seen as bishops, as sisters, as lay faithful. So the legacy that they have had is very noticeable if we really look at it. And of course, one thing I wanted to mention and maybe get you to talk just a little bit about is her status. She's the first United States citizen who was canonized. Can you just talk a little bit about the significance of that, and maybe even just an invitation to those who are listening to this to, you know, ask for her intercession?
Sure. So yes, she is a wonderful patron for all Americans. And it's so interesting that she really is a first generation American. She herself was an immigrant, and she writes in her letters, I found very amusing, that she is practicing English on many of these voyages back and forth. And she talks about how one of her sisters would only speak to her in English to try to get her to practice her skills and think on her feet and get the vocab and everything. And so what she was able to do in just learning a new culture and a new language and coming here as someone whose home was somewhere else, and just the really all of the emotions and difficulties that come with emigration, and then to quickly establish such a presence here really speaks obviously to her divine mission. And yes, she is, although the continent has had saints prior, she's the first American citizen to become a saint. So this, it seems a bit late because she died in 1917, but she really speaks to one of those very formative moments in American history of the early 20th century with the massive immigration flows throughout the world, and how she was able to, again, as I mentioned earlier, relate to such diverse groups of people and students, that she really embodied the universality of the church in that way, and also kind of this universality of the identity of American.
Mm. It's beautiful. Well, I don't want to take too much more of your time, so I want to kind of give you a chance. If someone is looking to Sophia and they're looking for the ability to learn more about Mother Cabrini, what books can they pick up? Can you just tell us a little bit about the two books and then where they can find them?
Of course. So we have three books that we're offering. Tied into the movie. That's okay. The two that I'm representing as spokesperson are the one that I edited, called The Cabrini Companion, which is, as I mentioned, a devotional. So this is a book that you're meant to kind of take with you throughout the year. You don't have to read it all in one setting. These are all Mother Cabrini's own words from her letters that she's acting as spiritual mother to her sisters. And I have organized them thematically. So humility, the virtues, the beauty of God's creation, excerpted all of her writings on these topics into what I think will be a helpful weekly guide that you can take to adoration or read after Mass on Sundays, something like that, just to get to know her a bit better. I always love reading the saints and anyone I'm interested in their own words whenever possible. So I love the opportunity to do that. The second book is called The World is Too Small, and this is a reprint of a full biography of Mother Cabrini that was issued in the 40s, so right about the time she was canonized. So this is something that really relies on a lot of the, obviously, the evidence that had been collected about her life and her various writings around and surrounding the canonization process, and was very timely at the time it was originally published. And I think captures the spirit of that age very well and the excitement around Mother Cabrini's life. And of course, is very in-depth and will have all of the tiny details about her life and a lot of food for thought. And then the third book is actually a children's book. So it's a picture book of Mother Cabrini's life, starting in her childhood and then really culminating where the film ends. So it's meant as kind of the pictorial companion to the movie, and it's adorable.
Oh, that's great.
And of course, they are all available at sophiainstitute.com. You should see them right on the homepage.
Okay, perfect. Well, I want to give you a chance. Any final thoughts, anything you want to add to what we've talked about here?
Yeah, my final thought would just be allow yourself to be surprised by saints. That, as we talked about, Mother Cabrini was not someone really on my radar, but the more I get to know her, the more I find I have in common with her and can really relate to her spirit. So if you get the chance, definitely go see the movie and then get to know her better by reading some of these books to get a better sense of what she was all about.
Yeah, I second that for sure. Kristen, I got two final questions for you. I ask every single guest who comes on our podcast. Firstly, who is on your Mount Rushmore of saints?
Oh, okay. I really love St. Catherine of Alexandria, who was this philosopher who just defeated like 50 pagan philosophers in a debate once, which is just really inspiring as someone who's like, you know, in writing for a living. And also, incidentally, I did not know this before, but I separately developed a devotion to St. Margaret of Antioch. And turns out I've always loved Joan of Arc. These are two of the saints that appeared to St. Joan of Arc. So I'm like, perfect. That's the trifecta to keep right there. And then also St. Helena is my confirmation saint. I really, really love the early Roman martyrs and early Roman period. I find it really relates to the work I've done researching persecution in the 20th century, is just living within that fire of decision-making in the first couple of centuries. So yeah, it's hard to pick only a few, but I guess that's four.
Okay. Well, those are wonderful. I love asking that question because everyone just has different saints, and the reasons behind them are always really cool to hear too. So my last question for you, God willing, one day you're going to be a saint yourself. What are you going to be the patron saint of?
Oh, man. Oh, I don't know. I feel like it's going to be something. So many of them are taken. I think it's probably going to have something.
You can double up. You think
that's true.
Only need one saint. They need multiple saints.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like it's going to have something to do with modernity, because like many of the challenges in our lives are like surrounding technology or other issues that the saints of yore haven't really had to face. So yeah, patron saint of somehow surviving in the technological age would maybe be on point.
Yeah, well, it's a beautiful one and a necessary one too. So I appreciate you taking the time today to talk to me and to those who listen about Mother Cabrini. What a wonderful woman and what an example to each and every one of us. So if you were able to listen to today's podcast, I appreciate it. Thank you, Kristen, for taking the time to talk. If you liked today's podcast, share it with someone you know. Give us 5 stars on either Spotify or on iTunes. It really helps us to be found. And have a great day, and God bless. Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe and check out goodcatholic.com for more details.